A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been staring at diagrams again. Two of them, side by side. A loop drawn as a sequential chain where each step feeds the next, and the same loop drawn as a fan-out, where several agents run at once and something collects the results. They're presented as two ways of building the same thing, which got him thinking the loop isn't the interesting object. The topology is. His question, what actually decides whether world branches out in parallel or runs as a sequential chain?
Which is?
Or do error propagation, cost, latency, and the difficulty of merging divergent results push you toward chains even when the dependency graph would permit fanning out? And then there's the join node. What does it actually have to do when four agents come back with contradictory work? And is that reconciliation cost the real reason people default to sequential? Last piece, where does a loop even live in a graph?
That's already three questions in one, and I love it.
He's got more. What does a join node actually have to do when four agents come back with contradictory work? And is that reconciliation cost the real reason people default to sequential? And then the one that connects it all, where does a loop even live in a graph? Is it a cycle in the topology, or a controller sitting outside it that reruns the whole thing until some condition holds?
A sequential chain, each step feeds the next, one path, linear, and a fan-out, several agents run at once, a join node collects results.
We've poked at nearby ground before, but this is different. This is about workflow shape and graph design, not context budgets. So where do we start?
The workflow design decides what does. Two different shapes, same logical loop. The implication is you can pick either one. But the loop isn't in either of those diagrams. The loop is whatever decided to run the graph again. That's the part nobody draws.
So you're saying both diagrams are already wrong before we even get to the parallel versus sequential question?
They're not wrong, they're incomplete. They show the graph. They don't show the thing that invokes the graph. And that distinction is the whole game.
Walk me through the two shapes concretely first. Define them.
But here's the thing people miss. The dependency graph is almost never the binding constraint in practice. It's a lower bound on latency, not a prescription. It tells you the fastest a workflow could possibly run if nothing else mattered. Nothing else is a lot of things. Think of it like a road network. The map says you can drive from point A to point B at 60 miles an hour if the roads are empty.
And the fan out.
One node fans out to four agents. They all run at the same time. They don't need each other's outputs. When they finish, all four results go to a join node that does something with them. Concatenates, votes, merges, picks the best one. LangGraph's execution model makes this concrete. The Graph API models workflows where nodes are functions and edges are dependencies. The executor runs in supersteps. Each superstep fires every node whose inputs are ready.
So the dependency graph is the floor. You can only fan out when the work is independent.
That's the necessary condition. But it's not sufficient, and this is where most discussions stop. They check the dependency graph, see that B and C don't depend on each other, and declare victory. Parallelize everything. That's the first push towards sequential. Error propagation. In a chain, a failure at step N stops the workflow cleanly. You know exactly where it died, you've got a single stack trace, you retry from that point.
So what pushes you off the parallel path, even when the dependency graph says go ahead?
The blast radius of a failure is much larger in parallel, and the debugging story is worse. With a chain, the failure is localized. With a fan-out, you're staring at four outputs and trying to figure out which one poisoned the join. Agent 1 reads a paper, Agent 2 reads documentation, Agent 3 scrapes a forum, Agent 4 runs a search. They all come back with findings. The join node concatenates them. That's cheap. The join is basically append.
And that's the case where parallel wins.
The fourth misreads the report, swaps revenue for profit, and writes that profit is up 4%. But profit actually dropped. The join node receives four summaries. Three are consistent. One is wrong, but reads perfectly smoothly.
Now give me the case where it falls apart.
That requires understanding that revenue and profit are different things and cross-referencing against the source. Most join nodes aren't that smart. They see 4 summaries, they see 3 agree, and they either take the majority, which works here, or they get confused by the internal coherence of the wrong one and produce a garbled synthesis.
So, error detection at the join is an unsolved problem in a lot of systems.
It's an unsolved problem that most teams don't realize they have until they hit it in production. But we'll get deeper into join nodes. The second push towards sequential is cost. Running 4 agents in parallel means paying for 4 agents even if 3 of them produce work you discard at the join. Sequential lets you early. Exit. If step 2 produces a result that makes step 3 unnecessary, you never pay for step 3.
And that adjudication is itself an agent.
It's an agent or a prompt doing a merge pass, and it has to make judgments. Are these 2 implementations contradictory, or are they complementary approaches to different subproblems? Wall clock time drops, yes, but only if the join node isn't the bottleneck, and join nodes usually are because they have to wait for the slowest branch.
So the reconciliation cost is the hidden tax on parallelism.
The latency argument for parallel only holds when the branches are roughly equal in duration and the join is cheap. Neither of those is guaranteed.
So you've got error propagation, pushing towards sequential, cost pushing towards sequential, and latency being oversold as the parallel advantage. What's left?
The thing that actually kills parallel in production. So if dependency isn't the binding constraint, what is? The answer is sitting at the join node.
The join node is where parallel workflows go to die.
Here's what a join node actually is in LangGraph. It's not a merge, it's a reducer. The Graph API lets you specify how to combine outputs from multiple branches, and the default reducer behavior is often just overwrite with last.
Let's talk about error propagation. That's the other thing Daniel flagged.
In a sequential chain, step 3 fails. You know exactly where it broke. You have the input to step 3 and the output it produced, or failed to produce. The blame trail is 1 step long.
Clean.
That means it needs a rubric, or a voting mechanism, or a 5th agent to arbitrate. It's a whole new piece of logic that the sequential chain never needs. Is the whole fanout tainted because the join node was expecting 4 inputs and you only have 3?
And you don't necessarily know whether the failure contaminated the other 3.
Each step produces 1 output, the next step consumes it, and if something's wrong, you can trace it. Parallel hides the reconciliation cost until you hit it, and by then you've built a system that's harder to debug and more expensive to run than the sequential version would have been.
So, the join node has to be better than the agents it's joining.
That's the knock-on effect. If the join node can't tell good output from bad, the parallelism is actively harmful. It amplifies errors instead of catching them. This is why you see production systems use parallel for independent, verifiable subtasks. Fetch this document, fetch that document, fetch this API response, and sequential for anything where quality is subjective. Fetching is verifiable.
What about cost and latency? Daniel mentioned those too.
Fanout looks like the latency win. 4 agents run at once, wall clock time is the slowest agent. If each takes 30 seconds, your total is 30 seconds instead of 2 minutes. That's real.
But the tokens spend.
That rubric is a prompt. That prompt is an agent. And that agent is harder to build than any of the 4 that produce the summaries, because it has to understand 4 outputs, evaluate their accuracy, and synthesize something coherent. You've built 5 agents. The sequential version builds 1 agent that writes a summary, then a 2nd that critiques it, then a 3rd that refines it. 3 agents, and the critique step has a single output to evaluate.
So the reconciliation cost is the real reason people default to sequential. It's not that parallel is impossible, it's that the join node is harder than the workflow it's joining.
And the cost is hidden until you hit it. The diagram looks clean. The implementation is a mess. Now let's talk about where loops live, because this connects directly. If the join node itself is a large language model call doing heavy reconciliation, that's a 6th run. Your 4,000 token budget just became 6,000.
And the latency advantage shrinks because you're running the join and the rerun sequentially.
You define nodes and edges, the executor runs them in super steps, and when it's done, the graph is done. The loop is the executor, or something above the executor, rerunning the graph or subgraph until a condition holds.
So the cost advantage of parallel can evaporate completely.
It can invert. You paid a parallelism premium for no latency gain and a harder debugging experience.
That's the join node as cost center. But there's a deeper thing here. The join node's reconciliation logic is itself a specification you have to write.
If the loop is a cycle in the topology, an edge that goes from node 5 back to node 2, you have to reason about termination, liveness, and state convergence inside the graph. You've got a cyclic graph, and every time you run it, you're asking, will this ever stop, and what does the state look like when it does? If the loop is a controller outside, you have a much simpler object.
You have to write the resolution policy.
Majority vote? Confidence scores? Recency? Source authority? If Agent 1 cited the official documentation and Agent 2 cited a blog post from 3 years ago, does source authority break the tie? You have to encode that. Right. The building effective agents piece frames the agent loop as a model that calls tools, observes results, and decides whether to continue. That's exactly a controller pattern, not a graph cycle. The model is the controller.
Because the agents just have to do their job. The join node has to understand everyone's job and decide who did it right.
The steps themselves might be graph executions. A subgraph that does research, a subgraph that writes code, but the loop is the model sitting outside those graphs making decisions.
So parallel versus sequential and loop as controller are the same design instinct.
Both are about keeping the graph simple and pushing complexity into the orchestration layer. The graph is a pure function of its inputs. The controller is where the judgment lives. The controller decides what to run, in what order, how many times, and what to do with the results. The graph just executes. This is why the two diagrams Daniel mentioned, the chain and the fanout, are both valid. They're both graphs.
What do they do instead?
They put a controller outside the graph. The graph is a pure function. It takes input, produces output, and terminates. The controller inspects the output. Landgraf's checkpointing model makes this practical. You run a graph, it produces a checkpoint, a snapshot of the state at the end of execution.
So, the graph is a pure function, and the controller is the loop.
That's the dominant pattern in practice. And the reason is simple. It's easier to reason about. The graph does one thing, transform input to output. The controller does one thing, decide whether to run the graph again. You can test them separately. The interesting question is always what the join node has to do. Because whether you're running parallel branches or sequential steps, whether you're looping once or 10 times, something has to collect the outputs and decide what to do next.
What do you lose with the controller pattern?
Granularity. The controller can only rerun the whole graph. It can't loop a single sub-branch. If step 3 of a 4-step chain is the part that needs to iterate, too bad, you're rerunning steps 1 through 4. You pay for all 4 steps again, even though only one needed refinement.
Whereas an in-graph cycle could loop just the sub-branch.
In theory, yes. You could draw a cycle that only re-enters step 3, leaving steps 1, 2, and 4 untouched. But now you're inside the graph, and the exit condition has to be encoded in the node logic. Step 3 has to know when its output is good enough and when to loop back. That couples the iteration logic to the step logic.
The join node was you.
Much harder. You're tracing a path through a graph that can revisit nodes. The state at node 3 on the third visit is different from the state on the first visit. The contractors. They couldn't reconcile with each other?
So the controller pattern trades granularity for testability.
And testability is winning. The industry default is shifting toward outside the graph intelligence because you can unit test the graph and integration test the controller. In-graph cycles are more elegant on a whiteboard, but they're a nightmare in production.
When you see loops and graph engineering mentioned in the same breath, what people usually mean is the controller pattern.
You turned a fanout into a chain.
Say more.
The chain diagram and the fanout diagram are both graphs. They're both pure functions if you squint. The chain takes input, runs steps 1 through 4, produces output. The fanout takes input, fans to 4 agents, joins, produces output. It is. Sequential isn't just about dependency, it's about having a single authoritative state you can inspect and roll back to. When you fan out, you fork the state. 4 branches, 4 states, and they diverge.
So both diagrams are showing you the wrong object.
They're showing you the graph. They should be showing you the graph plus the thing that calls the graph. But the thing that calls the graph isn't graph-shaped, so it doesn't make it into the diagram.
This connects back to the parallel versus sequential decision in a way I didn't expect.
That's the cost argument we made earlier, but applied to humans. Parallel commits you to the full fan-out cost up front, and then adds the reconciliation cost on top. Sequential costs more in labor hours, but less in coordination overhead. The parallel versus sequential choice is one instance of that larger question. The loop location question is another instance. They're both asking, what lives in the topology and what lives in the thing that runs the topology?
The join node has to be better than the agents it's joining.
Because the controller is easier to change, you can tweak the exit condition, the retry policy, the error handling, without touching the agents. If your join node reconciliation logic is inside the graph, changing it means editing the graph. That's a different kind of authority. The join node in a LangGraph workflow doesn't have signing authority. It has to earn its decisions.
Unless you design it out of the system entirely, which is what sequential does.
That's the trade. And it's not a permanent trade, it's a function of where the tooling is. Right now, the tooling makes controller patterns easy and in-graph cycles hard. That could flip.
Let's pull on the debugging shape more. You said sequential gives you a clean blame trail, and parallel gives you a fan-in of blame. What does the controller pattern give you?
A blame stack. The graph ran, produced output, the controller said not good enough, the graph ran again. You can inspect each run independently because each run is a pure function with its own input and output. You can diff run 2 against run 1 and see what changed. That's much harder with an in-graph cycle because the state is cumulative.
So the controller pattern gives you snapshot, able runs.
Here's the thing. You didn't just change the topology, you changed the failure pattern. In the fan-out, a mistake by one contractor became your problem at the merge step. In the chain, a mistake by the first contractor became the second contractor's problem immediately.
That's a strong argument for the controller pattern, even before you get to testability.
It's the operational argument. The development argument is testability. The operational argument is debuggability. They both point the same direction.
The chain didn't eliminate errors. It made them cheaper to fix.
That's right. The controller sees what the graph emits. If step 2 produced something subtly wrong and step 3 papered over it, the final output might look fine. The controller approves it, the loop exits, and the bud ships.
An in-graph cycle could catch the error at step 2 because the cycle lives at that node.
If you design the exit condition at step 2 correctly. But that's the whole problem. Designing exit conditions at every node is harder than designing one exit condition at the controller. The controller pattern accepts that some errors will slip through in exchange for a simpler system.
That's a real trade.
That's a design property. Sequential gives you a linear causal chain. Parallel gives you a tree, and trees are harder to reason about even when the join node is perfect.
And the loop.
The loop was never the object. The topology is the design decision. The loop is just the controller's way of saying, try again.
Which explains why sequential is the default in practice.
It's not that people are lazy or don't understand parallelism. It's that the dependency graph says go parallel, but the operational graph says go sequential. The loop isn't in the diagram at all. It's the hand that drew the diagram, picking it up and running it again.
We'll be back soon with an episode on what happens when the join node itself is an agent, and whether that's a recursion you can trust.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumentop for producing, and for the reminder that none of this is new. It's just faster now.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you want to yell at us about graph topology, the email is show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll see you tomorrow.
Because the agents have a clear task. Research this source. Write code that does X. The task is bounded. The join node's task is unbounded. Reconcile these outputs, where the space of possible disagreements is the space of everything the agents could have produced. You're writing a spec that has to handle every possible output combination.
So you're essentially writing a type system for agent outputs.
That's exactly what it is. You're defining what a valid output looks like, what kinds of variation are acceptable, and what kinds of variation are contradictions. And you're doing it without the benefit of a compiler. You're doing it in a prompt.
And if you get the spec wrong, the join node either rejects valid work or accepts invalid work.
Both failure pattern are bad. reject valid work, and you rerun branches unnecessarily, burning tokens. Accept invalid work, and you ship bugs. The spec has to be right.
Which is why people default to sequential even when parallel is possible. They're not avoiding the join node. They're avoiding writing the join node spec.
The unwritten spec is the real cost. The join node isn't inherently expensive. A concatenation join is basically free. A voting join with three agents doing the same task is cheap. Majority wins, done. The join gets expensive when the outputs are heterogeneous, and the reconciliation requires judgment.
And judgment is the thing we're least good at encoding in prompts.
Judgment requires context, nuance, trade-offs. Prompts are bad at nuance. So the join node either becomes a full agent with a massive system prompt full of edge case rules, which is brittle, or it becomes a human in the loop, which kills the latency advantage of parallelism.
So we've got a kind of impossibility result. Parallelism is only worth it when the join is cheap. The join is only cheap when the outputs are either homogeneous enough to vote on, or heterogeneous enough to simply concatenate. The interesting cases, where the outputs are heterogeneous and require judgment, are exactly where parallelism is most expensive.
That's the paradox. The cases where you most want parallelism, complex tasks where multiple perspectives would help, are the cases where the join is hardest. The cases where the join is easiest, simple tasks where the outputs are predictable, are the cases where parallelism adds the least value.
Oh, so the sweet spot is narrow.
It's narrow, but real. Research tasks with independent sources, fact-checking where each agent checks a different claim, translation in the multiple languages, anything where the outputs don't need to be reconciled because they're answers to different questions.
Hilbert, you've been quiet. You've got something on this, don't you?
Late 90s. I ran a data cleaning shop, insurance claims. Four temp workers each got a batch of claims on Monday morning. They'd reconcile them against policy records, mark discrepancies, and hand their spreadsheets to a senior clerk on Friday.
A human fan-out with a human join node.
The senior clerk was the most expensive person in the building. She'd spent all Friday merging four spreadsheets by hand, looking for duplicates across batches, resolving contradictory entries, deciding which temp worker had the right version when two of them touched the same claim.
And the operation ran sequential for years.
Sequential for years. One clerk, one batch, handed off. Parallel was faster on paper, but the merge ate all the savings. Management kept saying we should parallelize, and every time they tried, Friday turned into a disaster.
What changed?
We wrote the spec, sat down, and defined exactly what counted as a match across batches. Claim number, date of service, patient name. If two temps touched the same claim, the resolution policy was most recent service date wins unless the policy number didn't match, in which case, flag for manual review.
You defined the reconciliation rules before the work started.
Once the rules existed, the merge became mechanical. The senior clerk didn't need to judge anymore. She just applied the rules. Took her 2 hours instead of 8.
So the join node wasn't inherently expensive. The unwritten join spec was...
That's what I'm saying. People default to sequential because they haven't done the work of defining what reconciliation means for their domain. They think the join is hard because they're imagining a human making judgment calls. But once the spec exists, the join is just pattern matching.
What happened to the senior clerk?
She got a rubber stamp, said APP roofed, HF on it. Her initials. She'd stamp batches without reading them when the automated checks came back clean. Saved her for the edge cases.
That's a join node that pattern matches instead of adjudicating.
The stamp only worked because the spec was so tight. If the rules said no conflict, there was no conflict. She didn't need to verify.
And the stamp was the signal that the merge was mechanical.
She was proud of that stamp. Had it made it a shop on Main Street, cost her $12.
The join node as rubber stamp. That's the ideal. The join is so well specified that it doesn't need to think.
Which is the opposite of how most people build these systems. They throw four agents at a problem, and then throw a fifth agent at the merge with a vague prompt about reconciling differences.
That's what we did the first three times. The fifth agent, well, the senior clerk, burned a whole day, and the output wasn't even consistent week to week.
The spec made it consistent.
The spec made it stampable.
Hilbert, you said the stamp was for clean batches. What happened when the batch wasn't clean?
Then she earned her salary. The stamp stayed in the drawer, and she went line by line. But clean batches were about 80% of the volume. The stamp handled the common case. Her judgment handled the exceptions.
That's the architecture. Cheap join for the common case, expensive join for the edge cases. You don't need the expensive join on every run.
The spec tells you which is which before you pay for the expensive join.
That's the part people skip. They don't write the spec, they just pay for the expensive join every time and wonder why parallel costs more than sequential.
The spec is the thing that tells the join node when it can stamp and when it has to think.
We had a name for batches that looked clean but weren't. We called them...
Don't tell me. Stamped anyway?
Stamped anyway. Took us 6 months to find the first one. Claimed for a procedure that didn't exist yet. The temp had fat-fingered the date, and the spec said most recent service date wins, so the fake date won.
The spec was correct, but the input was wrong. No spec catches bad inputs.
The spec catches contradictions. It doesn't catch fabrications. Different problem.
That's the thing about the join node. It can only reconcile what it receives. If all four agents are confidently wrong in compatible ways, the join node stamps it.
Garbage in, stamped garbage out.
The misconception here is that parallel is always better when the dependency graph permits it. The join node reconciliation cost can exceed the latency savings and the operational headaches. Debugging, error recovery, the unwritten spec push you towards sequential as the pragmatic default.
The second misconception, a loop in a multi-agent system, is a cycle in the graph topology. Most real systems implement loops as a controller outside the graph that reruns it until a condition holds. The graph is a pure function. The loop is in the orchestration layer.
The third one, the join node, is just a concatenation step. When agents return contradictory results, the join node is doing adjudication, and that reconciliation logic is a spec you have to write, often harder than writing the agents themselves.
The open question is whether that flips. As join node reconciliation becomes more standardized, voting schemes, confidence thresholds, source authority hierarchies, does the cost curve shift and make parallel the default?
The controller pattern is winning right now because it's testable. But the next frontier is probably in graph cycles with well-defined exit conditions once the tooling catches up.
The reframe to leave with, the loop was never the object, the topology is. And the topology is a decision about where you put the intelligence, in the graph or outside it.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you want more on graph topology and agent architecture, the website is myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.